from deep inside your radio.
From Seattle, Washington, where you come for the coffee, stay for the halibut cheeks. I'm Harry Shearer, and this is Le Show. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, a sad note. This week, Johnny Ramone passed away at 55. Of the Ramones, of that once seminal punk band. This is so wrong. This is so wrong. Only the drummer survives. That is so wrong, ladies and gentlemen. That is not the way rock and roll is meant to be. The Pentagon's last hope of flight testing critical new elements of the anti-missile system, which we're going to have before activating the system this autumn, vanished this week with the disclosure that the next flight test has been postponed until, you want to guess when? That's right, after the election. Why would that? The Air Force general in charge of the program said the setback will not affect plans to begin operating the system in the next month or two. Of course not. Deploy now, test later. What's wrong with that? That's a perfectly, why would you? The delay leaves the Pentagon pressing ahead with a system that will not have been flight tested in nearly 2 years and never with the actual interceptor that will be deployed. You know what fixes that, ladies and gentlemen? Just money. Just a little, well, a lot, just money. And I note with interest this week the hurricane news. It was a few years ago that televangelist Pat Robertson opined on this 700 Club that the imminence of a hurricane approaching Florida then might well be interpreted correctly as God's retribution for the fact that it was heading for Orlando, I believe, much like Ivan or Francis or one of them this week. The imminence of the that hurricane, historically in the Pat Robertson quotation, heading for Orlando, might well be correctly interpreted as God's retribution for Disney World having gay days where gay people were allowed to cavort in the land of Goofy and Mickey. So, looking at the course of Ivan this week, who totally missed New Orleans, one wonders if Reverend Robertson would agree with me that this is proof that a lifestyle of rampant bibulosity, Falstaffian gourmandizing, and costumed parading on the flimsiest pretext is a lifestyle that, on this week's evidence, has received the endorsement of the man upstairs. Hello, welcome to the show.
I turn down that highway, turn up that dirt road. Let's over 3 days since I left Houston. Oh, black's my drug's name. She's held together. I buy BF good tire and bailing wire. Well, I went to high school and I was not popular. Now I am older and then it don't matter. Oh, black's my drugs, me. She's held together. Well, I've slept inside her.
Together and lay some bubbles.
From Seattle, Washington, from the northwest edge of America, I'm Harry Scherer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, before anything more is said, it's time for the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Three Americans were jailed for a total of 28 years in Kabul this week for running a private prison and torturing detainees. The defense lawyer called the trial a circus. Jack Dima, described by U.S. officials as a bounty hunter, and his colleague Brent Bennett were sentenced to 10 years. They were arrested after Afghan authorities raided a home in Kabul and found eight Afghan prisoners. Several claimed to have been tortured by being denied food or having hot water poured over them. Dima, a former Special Forces soldier who helped defeat the Taliban in 2001, reacted furiously to the judge's verdict. "I effing apologize for helping to save them," he told a packed courtroom. "We should have let the Taliban murder every GD one of them." Unquote. Citigroup, the world's largest bank, was forced to shut its private banking operations in Japan after serious breaches were found by the nation's financial regulator. Citigroup sincerely apologized, marking the second time this week that the New York-based bank has expressed regret for its actions. The bank failed to conduct proper checks against money laundering. Your check's no good here. Several times in recent seasons, Marshall football coach Bob Pruitt has publicly referred to opposing players as Mandingos, terms viewed as racially insensitive toward African Americans by some. He described Ohio State this past week as having a bunch of Mandingos while talking with reporters in Huntington, West Virginia. After being called about the remark by USA Today, Pruitt said, "By all means, if I was offensive to anyone, I profusely apologized. I used it in an effort to explain superior physical ability." Unquote. I talked to you about Sally Robbins, the Australian rower who stopped rowing in their Olympic heat. Well, it's getting more heated. Relations within the women's eight rowing crew hit a new low, with Olympian Catriona Oliver slapping Sally Robbins in front of onlookers in an official function this week. Rowing Australia Chief Executive Andrew Dee, who was not present at the function, following the welcome home parade, says Robbins was speaking to her head coach when Oliver walked past and slapped her on the shoulder. Says Dee, "It's regrettable." Says Oliver, "I regret what took place, and I've sent my apologies to Sally. I'd like to extend that apology to all the other athletes at the function last night." Don't get those women rowers mad. Stanford Athletic Director Ted Leland apologized to Brigham Young University this week and its fans for a halftime show by the Cardinal Band that poked fun at polygamy with five dancers wearing wedding veils. "The actions of the Stanford Band were inappropriate, and I wish to apologize to BYU, their team, fans, and alumni." Says Leland, "We're committed to being good hosts to our opponents who visit Stanford. But wait till we visit." Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin apologized this week for blasphemy during a nationally televised meeting on health care reform, only after his aunt told him his mouth should be washed out with soap. Martin, sitting at a table with the heads of the country's 10 provinces, could clearly be heard muttering, quote, "Jesus Christ," unquote, after a presentation by the Premier of Manitoba, Gary Doer. Embarrassed, Prime Minister opened the second session of the meeting by apologizing profusely, saying he'd in fact been reacting to a note passed to him by a member of the staff. "I have two aunts, and during the break, one of my aunts called me and essentially pointed out I had used inappropriate language and suggested a bar of soap," he said. "I also want to apologize to anybody who might have taken offense at what I said. I most sincerely do, and I apologize to my aunt." Minnesota Timberwolves general manager Jim Stack apologized to the team and its fans this week for an incident that occurred 5 days before he was hired. A July 4th confrontation between Stack and another man at a youth baseball game in the Chicago area led to Stack's conviction for misdemeanor battery. "I'd like to apologize to the Timberwolves organization and their fans for the distraction," he said. "This was a very unfortunate situation, and I sincerely regret how it escalated all the way to the level it has today." This was about Little League and inappropriate adult contact. Nothing more need be said. Clarksville. Some Clarksville, somewhere. This is from the Leaf Chronicle, so wherever the Leaf Chronicle falls. Clarksville Police Chief Mark Smith said that he will offer two Old Trenton Road residents a written apology for officers mistakenly raiding their home Friday night. "I want to publicly apologize," he said. "There's certainly no pattern here." According to Smith, the police tactical team received information that a drug dealer lived at this address, but they ended up going to the house next door. "Yeah, there's no pattern there. That never happens. We've never heard of that before, Chief." Back to football, back to college football. USC quarterback Matt Leinart has received national attention for his play, but his T-shirt touched off a mini controversy during a network television interview. He appeared at halftime of last week's Miami-Florida State game wearing a T-shirt printed with "Expletive the BCS," a reference to USC not playing in the Sugar Bowl last season. The shirt was visible enough on TV for several fans to complain. He eventually apologized on a USC-run website promoting his Heisman Trophy campaign. "I'll wear it," he says. "I just won't wear it in interviews. I didn't realize what happened. I apologized. I just wore what I wear to school. I wasn't aware of the interview. It's inappropriate, and I want to be a role model." So you never heard of Janet Jackson, I guess. The U.S. military has apologized for the death of a journalist following a Baghdad helicopter strike and warned civilians to keep out of combat zones. I thought the whole place was a combat zone. All right, stay out. "I am sorry he lost his life," Major General Peter Chiarelli, commander of U.S. troops in Baghdad, told angry colleagues from Al Arabiya, whose journalist was killed on camera last Sunday. "We regret the loss of any innocent civilians." "Really?" said the major. Said Colonel Jim McConville. "That's a lot of regretting, the way we're counting it." We regret the loss of any innocent civilians, and we do everything in our power to limit these losses in combat operations, he said. The journalist in question was killed after rushing down from his apartment in Haifa Street to give a report to a Reuters camera on clashes between U.S. troops and insurgents. He just wanted to get the best footage, said his producer. The sad part was that 6 hours before, he was at my engagement party, said the producer. The Australian construction firm James Hardy has apologized to victims of asbestos. Still trying to figure out a settlement for that. An offshoot of the Renville County Republican Party in Minnesota apologized for issuing a press release that claimed God favors the political right and implied that those on the left were headed to hell. The press release by the Teenage Republicans of Renville County said the group would educate teens about why the nation is split between Christians on the right and non-Christians on the left. It goes on the group to say the group will talk about why God is detested by our opponents and will be a force for the Republican Party in Renville County, not to be ignored. Bob Rubel, head of the Renville County Republican Party, said the press release was a mistake. If some people were offended, I apologize, he said. It's the if from the if file. Dateline, Arizona, Maricopa County Supervisor Mary Rose Wilcox unlawfully tore down a 105-year-old house near downtown, a mistake she admits making while trying to help clean up her neighborhood. She and her husband Earl demolished the house after buying it in the summer. Earlier in the summer, they demolished it in August. She said she and her husband were mortified when they learned the house was listed as historic. In my eyes, Wilcox said, it was like rubble. We thought we were helping. Crackheads were sleeping there at night. Irony department. When she represented Southwest Phoenix on the city council in the late 1980s, Wilcox advocated tougher demolition rules to protect historic structures. Thank you. Thank you so much. My pleasure. An airman who led a training drill that accidentally tear-gassed a Tucson neighborhood was a brand-new instructor who held the drill without the knowledge of his squadron commander, a colonel from the airbase says now. Colonel Cesar Rodriguez attended a meeting of the Neighborhood Association to apologize in person and answer questions from residents who'd waited 6 months for the base to explain what was happening. This instructor, this is a quote, the instructor, this was his first time instructing, Rodriguez called the crowd. Unfortunately, right after the gas was released, the wind stopped completely. The damn wind, it'll do that. Ask New Orleans, ask Alabama. And finally, a contrite Chicago Buildings Commissioner, Stan Katterbeck, apologized for allowing two carpenters union honchos to get their unqualified kids into building inspector jobs, but he said he has no plans to quit. Shame on me for not checking. I won't make that mistake again, he said. It's an embarrassment. I would apologize to the mayor for it. I apologize for the lack of exercising my good judgment. But I think I have more to offer to the city of Chicago, and I think I can offer a lot more, unquote. You know, if you think you can, then there really is no reason. If you think you can offer more, there really is no reason to quit, is there? Ladies and gentlemen, the Apologies of the Week is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And any Just go ahead. Let's talk Iraq, shall we? That's always fun. And since the candidates aren't, actually, they're starting to. But still, Colin Powell told Congress this week creating a new intelligence director could guard against the type of faulty intelligence that led him to mislead the United Nations. This is still blaming the intelligence, even though we have, Greg Thielman, who used to work for the State Department Bureau of Intelligence, said in March 2003 that what was going on in the Bush administration was, quote, faith-based intelligence, unquote. I think we have indications this week that the administration, since most of the intelligence handling that went through the Defense Department was going through the special office of Undersecretary of Defense Doug Feith. I think we have Feith-based intelligence. Here's Bush saying, we didn't find the stockpiles we thought would be there, that we all thought would be there, Bush said at a campaign rally. But quoting the new report that's been leaked, the draft of which has been leaked by Charles Dulfer, the guy who replaced David Kaye as the chief weapons inspector in Iraq, Saddam Hussein had the capability of making weapons. What the report said was that he hoped, Saddam Hussein hoped, to start making nasty weapons again. If the UN ever relaxed its restrictions, if the U.S. and the UN ever relaxed their restrictions. So that's a big if. But, you know, Guy had hopes. Get rid of him. Bomb those hopes, ladies and gentlemen. The report, according to U.S. officials, broadly mirrors the findings of Dulfer's predecessor, David Kay. Kay, of course, said in January the U.S. intelligence community was all wrong in concluding that Iraq possessed banned weapons. Not all. Not all. There were some who said, wait a minute. Powell told Fox News Channel, if I had money to put on something, I would say that Saddam Hussein clearly had the intention of having such weapons. And if he had ever broken free of UN sanctions or international oversight, he would have built up stockpiles. If. Kay challenged the Bush administration's contention that Iraq's weapon program presented a dire threat. He said Iraq's dual-use chemical and industrial infrastructure had been so degraded by war, UN inspections, and economic sanctions, it's dubious to assume it could have been swiftly readied for large-scale production of lethal agents. He said the labs could have produced small quantities of biological or chemical agents, but nothing significant from a military point of view. He also voiced skepticism that the Iraqi drones could be used to deliver weapons, saying they were simply too small for that purpose. The Bush administration had sighted the drones as a threat. So, according to the Dulfer report, maybe, in his dream, Saddam could have produced small quantities of stuff, basically for targeted assassinations. Weapons of minimal destruction. Anyway, Powell says maybe there'll be better intelligence if this new national intelligence director is hired. He told the committee, this would be the Senate Government Affairs Committee. Yes, they can have affairs in the government. He had found that, quote, some of the sourcing that was used to give me the basis upon which to bring forward that judgment to the United Nations were flawed, were wrong. The sources had not been vetted widely enough across the intelligence community. He was distressed because someone in the community had knowledge that the sourcing was suspect, and that was not known to me, unquote. It was known to me. It was known to people who read the papers. But, you know, Secretary of State's too busy to read the papers. A British Army officer who won praise for a rousing speech to troops in Iraq before the war, or on the eve of the war, has now accused the United States and the United Kingdom of failing to plan for after the war. Colonel Tim Collins, who has now left the Army, hence his freedom to speak, said they should have given him more thought to what would happen after Saddam Hussein was deposed. Here's a brief excerpt of that.
The simple fact is that nature abhors a vacuum, and so do politics. And if you knock something down, you must be prepared to put something in its place or live with the consequences of that which fills the vacuum. It's fair to say that the United States and its ally, the UK, are living the consequences of having removed the Ba'athist regime without any thought about what would replace it.
I hope the accent wasn't too disturbing to you, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, you can't help what these Brits do. In hindsight, he had questioned the coalition's motivation for attacking Iraq when preparations for the aftermath were not made, he says. He says the evidence now points to the invasion being, quote, a cynical war inevitable to, unquote, inevitable to vent anger on Saddam Hussein's regime, quote, in which case, he continued, it's a form of common assault. Apropos, the British government came under renewed fire this week. This is from the Scotsman. Claims that Prime Minister Tony Blair was warned before the war in Iraq of the scale of the task that would face the coalition troops after Saddam Hussein was toppled. Papers marked secret and personal detailing warnings from the Foreign Office of the Premier were leaked to the Daily Telegraph. Papers warned of the dangers of successive military coups in Iraq after Saddam was toppled and said ousting Saddam was seen as unfinished business from the Gulf War of 1991. Tony Blair denies it. And on a similar note, I'm getting to it. Don't rush me. I got it right here. British Army is to start pulling troops out of Iraq next month. What? Despite the deteriorating security situation in much of the country, according to the British newspaper The Observer, the main British combat force in Iraq will be reduced by around a third by the end of October during a routine rotation of units. Oh, it's routine. Okay. Don't relate that to this. New Zealand's troops are pulling out of Iraq under a cloak of secrecy as security deteriorates. Nearly the New Zealand Defense Force is refusing to give any details of the withdrawal. of the 60-strong Kiwi military engineering contingent, which has been hunkered down in Basra. Let's hunker down in Basra for a while, what do you say? For the past 5 weeks, as violence escalates throughout Iraq. We do not discuss troop movements. The engineers have been in, said the defense spokeswoman. The engineers have been in Basra since last September, mainly to help in civil reconstruction around that city. They'd been restoring water treatment plants and fixing schools, police stations, and bridges. That work all but stopped last month when fighting spread south from Najaf. The New Zealanders were confined to the base they've shared for the past year with British forces. Our troops were sent in a non-combatant role, said a spokesperson. But what's happening now is that everyone's a combatant, whether they want to be one or not. As time has gone on, the situation has become much more lethal, and no one can guarantee their absolute safety, unquote. What can guarantee anyone's absolute safety? Absolute safety. Stay in bed, babe. Iraq universities, once among the most prestigious in the Arab world, are facing potential catastrophe with rampant kidnappings and murders, causing the intelligentsia to free abroad en masse. Sorry for going French there on you. I'm quoting a news story. Deans tell me their worries. I fear they will resign and that will lead us into a catastrophe, says Higher Education Minister Taher Abakar. That could be a catastrophic success. You never know. It's hard to tell a catastrophe from a catastrophic success. It's impossible to study in this atmosphere, Mr. Bakha said. Sounds like an excuse to me. So it's a brain drain. Their brains are draining. And finally, at the top of the week's news, soldiers from a combat unit in Fort Carson, Colorado, said they've been told to reenlist for 3 more years or be transferred to other units expected to deploy to Iraq. They said if you refuse to reenlist with the 3rd Brigade, we'll send you down to the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, which is going to Iraq, and you can stay with them, or we'll send you to Fort Riley in Kansas, where they're going to Iraq, said a sergeant. A second soldier echoed that view. They told us if we don't reenlist, then we'd have to be reassigned. Where we're most needed is in units they're going back to Iraq. So if you think you're getting out, you're not. The sergeant told the Rocky Mountain News the threat has outraged soldiers who are close to fulfilling their service obligation. We have a whole platoon, he said, who refuses to sign back up. 3rd Brigade recruitment officers denied threatening the soldiers with more duty in Iraq. And ladies and gentlemen, just one more note, and I'll stop. There'll be more on this in the next segment of the broadcast. All this talk about, in the wake of the CBS memos, the dispute about the CBS memos, and what did in fact happen in terms of President Bush's service in the National Guard. The refrain from the White House always is President Bush served honorably. He received, after all, an honorable discharge. So just for the record, John Allen Muhammad, convicted last November for his participation in the D.C. sniper shootings, served in the Louisiana National Guard from 1978 to 1985, where he faced 2 summary courts-martial. In 1983, he was charged with striking an officer, stealing a tape measure, and going AWOL. He was sentenced to 7 days in the brig. In 1985, he received an honorable discharge.
You can see that I'm trying, but it doesn't come easily to me. I'm hard around the eyes, like a gangster on a lookout. I know the ending now. Show me, bring me back to your love. Show me, can you bring me back to your love?
better.
From Seattle, this is Le Show. All the voices coming at you. Ladies and gentlemen, here's good news. You know all the alarm about problems with the new voting systems as we lurch toward the election day, the touchscreen voting and such. Well, Nevada had a success this week. Voters cast electronic ballots Tuesday on a $9.3 million voting system with more than 2,600 computers and printers in every county. The primary was free of serious problems that have embarrassed registrars in Florida, California, Maryland, and other states with touchscreen machines. Says a California observer who was there, they were incredibly organized. I think California, he says, could pull off a similar election if we had adequate training and education programs for poll workers and voters. That's all it takes. Just educating poll workers and voters. Well, voters are so well educated now, don't you think? Don't you really think? The printers gave computer scientists and voter rights advocates assurances that the elections could be fully audited. Dianne Feinstein, senator from California, co-sponsored legislation this week that would force hundreds of counties using touchscreens to install printers. The Nevada election demonstrates you can have efficient electronic voting machines, yet at the same time have a paper trail, said Feinstein's spokesman. Paper trail would ensure that if there's any question, the votes could be double-checked. Many registrars, ladies and gentlemen, here's the interest. Here's the cute part of the story. Many registrars oppose paper ballots, insisting that printers, which cost about $800 each, think of it, are prone to jamming and too complicated for poll workers. They be jamming. They require counties to purchase ink and paper. Now you're really pushing counties too far. And that negates the cost advantages of paperless systems. We got to teach all these other countries how to run a democracy because we really got it nailed, don't you think? I do. So we have a couple of follow-up stories, ladies and gentlemen. You remember the story about Mohammed Atta, one of the 9/11 hijackers, meeting in Prague with an Iraqi intelligence agent? William Sapphire of the New York Times was flogging this for years. This was one of the major cogs in the attempt to prove a link between Saddam Hussein and 9/11. A Czech lawmaker is leading calls for an investigation into why the Czech Republic's intelligence service had said they had that meeting. The bipartisan 9/11 commission in the United States has concluded that that meeting did not happen. Press reports now indicate that a second man named Mohammed Atta, a Pakistani businessman who spells his first name with three M's, hey, he could go in the Scotch tape business. Mohammed with two M's in the latter part of the name, one at the beginning. He also traveled to Prague at about the same time as the September 11th hijacker, confusing Czech authorities. And Friday, the Pentagon released more records about Bush's service in the Air National Guard in Texas, 2 days after a Texas Guard official said no new documents had been discovered. But that's not a flip-flop. That's a thing. So the documents, and as you know, there have been now many indications that perhaps the documents that CBS presented on 60 Minutes were not authentic. CBS, Dan Rather this week, interviewed the secretary of the former commander of George W. Bush in Texas, Colonel Killian. The secretary said, those documents, I didn't type those documents, I don't think they're authentic, but what they say is true. The second half of her sentence, of course, has been lost in the furor, or as the British like to say, furore, over CBS putting up those documents and vouching for them for a long period of time. Yes, it does sound like another bad, a really bad day at BlackRock. Next, here on Le Show.
Okay, I'm going to just put this marker down here. I know document examiners are all over the place on this one, and I believe you that ours are as good as anybody else's. So, with that in mind, please, why don't we try to just get some document examiners in here that might be better for television? I mean, CNN, ABC, they seem to be able to unearth some folks who actually don't twitch when they talk. All right, call me. Who is it?
Brother Wallace.
Mm-hmm. Who is it really?
Brother Wallace.
You sure this isn't a recreation of Brother Wallace, a hologram being faxed from the Abilene Kinkos?
I'm sure.
Come on in.
You sure I'm not bothering you? You don't want to eat your... What is that you're eating?
Takeout from the Four Seasons. This little container is the foie gras.
Okay.
I know you're more the takeout meatball kind of customer.
Hey, not only did the city apologize for the arrest in that little incident, mm-hmm. The deli apologized for the meatballs. So, Daniel, how goes it in the big trench?
Here's the thing that bugs me earth core deep, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have even been doing this story. Yeah, I should have been covering Ivan. You know how that feels to miss out on maybe the last big hurricane of your career?
I wouldn't worry, Daniel. They're saying there'll be a lot more bad hurricanes next few years.
Global warming.
I think so. Well, I have to say, Daniel, you don't look like a worried man.
I'm not paid to look like a worried man, Hoss. I'm paid to do old-fashioned beat-your-shoe-leather to the pavement until it cries uncle-style reporting.
Well,
actually, I'm not. I'm paid to sit at the desk and read the news. But I'm not paid to look worried. Unlike some of my unnamed colleagues.
Hey, pal, maybe they're afraid. Who knows? Maybe the Bush family owns part of Viacom. You know, just getting into the swim of the theorizing
I know.
But doesn't it seem the least bit suspicious that people were punching holes in your documents, metaphorically speaking, mm-hmm. just a couple of hours after you went off the air?
Maybe the Bush family has a mole in my shop. Maybe, to be fair, so does the carry operation.
All
just
right.
Trying to do what I've always done, Michael. Mm-hmm. Play it straight down the middle of the fairway. No hook, no slice.
Save it for the press conference, amigo. Your credibility is on the line.
Oh, look here, Hoss. My credibility has been on the line ever since I kissed goodbye to KRLD-TV Dallas. My credibility is on the line every time we do a reality check, an inside story, a money minute.
All right, then. The tattered remnant of what used to be the credibility of this organization's on the line.
Oh, I know it, Michael. But we've been there and done that. For a while, the whole of the Western world thought a certain Mike Wallace was full of alar. You came back. We came back.
Those were different times, Daniel. Oh. Those were just apples. More importantly, I didn't have a target on my back for all Republicans to aim at since I left the Pecos.
Michael, how long have we known each other?
Few decades, give or take a few decades.
Mm-hmm. That's the first time I ever heard you pronounce the name of that river correctly, as if you don't buy your boots at Florsheim's.
Well.
But you...
You all right, Daniel? Daniel?
Yes. Just a little clump of oyster ragu had caught in my windpipe there. No reason to call Dr. Heimlich.
All right.
But Brother Wallace... Mm-hmm. When we reported this week that the documents may be inauthentic, but the story itself is rock solid and dead steer definite, you didn't believe that?
Daniel, there's a website called Rathergate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. The man who rocketed to national prominence covering Watergate is now, himself, a gate.
Compadre, let's just send it down the flagpole a few feet here. You're not saying that because this story raises up some desert dust devils during election year that we shouldn't have covered it, are you?
No, I'm definitely not saying that. I don't even know what a desert dust...
All right, then, at least we're squatting at the same campfire.
I'm just saying, maybe an extra dollop of the old rather skepticism...
Oh, sir, please... Throughout this whole story, I've been more skeptical than a heifer at a cattle auction, but we would be shirking our obligation to voters if we waited to report this story until after the election, wouldn't we? I mean, isn't that who our political coverage is supposed to serve?
I thought we were here to serve viewers.
Voters are viewers.
But not all viewers are voters.
Well, maybe that's part of our world, part of our job, to help turn viewers into voters.
Well, if what Drudge says about your ratings is true, some of your viewers have already voted.
Brother Wallace, I don't know. Maybe I was injected at birth with bulldog DNA, but this is a story we worked long and hard to get our teeth into, and I see no reason not to give it a good shaking until and unless we've got diamond-hard proof, court case clear and car crash conclusive, that these documents came from, I guess you'd have to call it, the counterfeit file. And if and when that happens, we're going to be bulldog tough on that angle, too. Can't help it, Hoss. It's the way I'm hardwired. In the meantime, I'm going to hunker down in here and enjoy what's left of my cowboy steak.
The Four Seasons has something called cowboy steak?
It's just their pepper steak with some hot sauce on it.
Oh. Look, Daniel, I guess my point is simply, we're all concerned for you. Even if you're not concerned for you or about you.
Michael, you think I haven't applied the backside of my good side to the members of my team? What few of them are left? Look, compadre. You know as well as I do, 20 years ago we had the budget to consult all the document experts in the country and as well as having the people to read their reports. Now we're trying to do first-class journalism from way back in the economy cabin. We're riding on intern labor, my friend. Mm. Not copying any kind of plea here. It's just as Uncle Walter used to say, that's the way it is.
I know, Daniel, but faxes from the Abilene Kinkos.
Michael, hear this and hear this well. Don't jump to conclusions just yet, please, partner. We're deep into finding out for 24 carats sure whether or not Abilene has a second Kinko's. I seem to think it does.
All right, Daniel. Well, if there's anything I can do or say or not do or say, be sure to let me know.
Hoss, I appreciate it, but this you can take down to the mint and print money on. Dan Rather doesn't sacrifice a good hurricane story for a bad politics story. That dog don't hunt.
Okay, Brother Rather. Good luck.
They don't let me say it on the air anymore, Michael, but courage. You want some plum mousse for the road?
No, thanks. Good night.
We were sick and tired of Buffalo, tired of freezing and shoveling snow, so we packed it up, moved out to the coast to find us a house in California. Something at the beach or Hollywood, three or four bedrooms sound real good. Don't have to have a pool or rave or run, just a simple little house in California. The bank said, son, what do you do? I said, I play guitar down at the Rendezvous. He said, boy, you need to be a big time actor or a corporate lawyer if you wanna buy a house in California. Cause it don't snow and it don't rain, every day it looks the same. But before you pack your things, let me warn ya, it's the land of milk and honey, but you better have good money if you're looking for a house in California. Well, I got three jobs, my wife's got two. Kids flipping burgers at the local drive-thru. We all doing everything we can. We saving for a house in California. Then one day, things start shaking. Sky went dark and the earth was quaking. Then overnight, it became alarming. How the price dropped on a house in California. Well, it's a roof and it needs a plumber. Yeah, yeah, it's a real fixer-upper. Friends back east said somebody should've warned you, but I finally got my house in California. And it don't snow and it don't rain, every day looks the same. And before you pack your things, let me warn you, it's the land of milk and honey, but you better have good money if you're looking for a house in California. If you're looking for a house in California, well, I finally got my house in California.
I hear you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, it's time for me to read the trades for you. First, from Advertising Age, marketers chase consumers into the bathroom. You know I'll read that for you. You have to hold me down not to. Dateline New York, once almost universally respected as rare islands of personal privacy, public bathrooms have now become a major target of mainstream marketers. In the old days, the only commercial texts normally found in toilet stalls and on urinal walls were those placed by antisocial cranks and hookers. But in recent years, marketers like Sony Music, Unilever, and Nintendo, along with major liquor companies and TV networks, have been systematically elbowing aside the hookers and cranks to get their own commercial messages in front of a demographic with its zipper undone. Deodorant brands, recording artists, video games, and automakers are routinely buying space on the doors of toilet stalls or urinal walls. The venue offers an audience that is captive to its biological needs, says David Turner, president of the Indoor Billboard Advertising Association. He says in a restaurant, 75% of the patrons use the restroom. In a bar or nightclub, the average patron uses the restroom almost three times per stay. When Sony Music launched country singer Gretchen Wilson this May, the company's media plan included restroom advertisements in clubs and sports venues. The arena holds 50,000 people watching football, drinking Cokes and beers all day. They'll go to the bathroom possibly three times a day, says Margie Hunt, marketing specialist for Sony Music Nashville. We knew Gretchen's music would appeal to lots of people who go to the Speedway. It's just a matter of getting the most impressions. We looked for the right demographics. Packaged goods giant Unilever has advertised its Axe deodorant in bathrooms since the product launched a couple years ago. It's currently running restroom ads in 10 cities. Aimed at 18 to 25-year-old men, Axe is a brand that, quote, is about helping a guy attract women, unquote, says David Rubin, brand manager. It is a social brand in that respect, and there's no place like a bar for guys to meet women, unquote. Advertising in restrooms, bars, restaurants, and shopping centers is on the rise, up 14% from last year, which rose 12% over the year before. Marketers with the greatest increase year to date are women's apparel. Marketers also like restrooms for cost and the ability to target consumers. Nintendo achieved one of its most successful game launches in 2001 when it launched Conker's Bad Fur Day. Aimed to appeal to college guys, Conker is a squirrel who, among other things, drinks and urinates frequently. The media campaign included urinal mats. Says Gina Broderick, media director that handled Nintendo. Like Conker, our target's focus is on his social life. Being in bars is absolutely being in their element, and because urinating is part of gameplay, it made total sense. Unquote. To be sure, urinal mats aren't for every customer. Go Gorilla Media in New York, a vendor of Gorilla Media that produces message-laden stuff such as swizzle sticks, condoms, and matchbooks for clients, said although many marketers inquire about urinal mats, few pony up the money. It's very difficult to get a client past the fact that there'll be people peeing on their ad message, says Joe Bonadio. It is a challenge. Even Ms. Broderick, responsible for the Conker urinal mats, agreed that, quote, bathroom advertising comes with baggage. It is a bathroom. You really have to work with the humor of the fact that you were in the bathroom. The link between the message, the media, and the target has to be at play, she says. Decrying the loss of the good old days when going to the bathroom allowed for privacy in a media-free zone, Robert Thompson, professor of popular culture at Syracuse University, looked on the bright side. Maybe the benefit is that as bathrooms increasingly become a major place for advertising, we will see cleaner public bathrooms because advertisers will have a vested interest in keeping them that way. Unquote. And finally, from O'Dwyer's PR Daily, the U.S. government is soliciting proposals for an aggressive and comprehensive PR and advertising push in Iraq to convey military and diplomatic goals to Iraqis and gain their support. The government tested the waters for firms with extensive Middle East experience and expertise in all forms of media. Past work with governments and private businesses is also required. And any recent experience in Iraq or neighboring countries is seen as critical. Colonel David Fowler of the U.S. Navy told O'Dwyer the agency is currently soliciting bids for the work and can't release any information on firms pitching for it. He noted that his team is shorthanded. The agency wants to award a contract before October 1st. Among the tasks, the government wants the firm to set up a rebuttal cell with a specific task of monitoring all media throughout Iraq and immediately and effectively responding to reports that unfairly target the coalition or coalition interests. A firm submitting a proposal for a PR effort will be responsible for hiring coalition-approved security personnel and will not be allowed to travel alone in the country. The government will supply office space. Good news, ladies and gentlemen. Always on hand when I read the trades for you. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. God, the copyright department of this broadcast must be busy. No, it's not. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to put the rain hat on this edition of Le Show from Seattle. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, on your computer or on the computer you borrow. At harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, and now available as a live download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And it would be just like Saddam Hussein not having even had those hopes. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, huh? The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. LeShow Internet Services by Steve Mack. LeShow Playlists relentlessly available at harryshearer.com. Our thanks to Doug here at KUOW Seattle for helping to make today's broadcast possible. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.